Good morning. Brian of London here in my car because my usual coffee place in the forest was shut. Obviously too much rain the last few days. We've had absolutely epic 50-year maximum rain. Huge flooding all over the place. Actually pretty horrible scenes and some dead people. Very, very unfortunate, but we need the rain always. The Kinneret is filling up. More than 20 centimetres in a single day, yesterday or the day before. So the rain sticks really, really hit us. Anyway, so a couple of topics today. I might even split this video in two. I'm Brian of London. Usually I give these talks from the forest, but I'm in my car next to the forest. Tommy Robinson. Let's talk about Tommy. I haven't talked about Tommy for a while. Tommy was on British television last night, ITV. An ITV documentary filmed by this guy, Ross Kemp, who pretends to be a hard guy and does, I don't know, journalism, I think, about gangs. And anyway, he was inside HMP Belmarsh. And I would say about a third of last night's programme centred around Tommy Robinson. Because that was where Tommy was sent. A few interesting points. One, the on the day of his sentencing, Belmarsh seemed to know that he was coming there. I mean, they were doing planning meetings 3 or 4 hours before the verdict, before the sentence was announced. So they obviously had some kind of warning that he was definitely going to a custodial sentence. Remember, he'd already served for the same activity. He'd already served the year before, he'd served in Onley time related to this live streaming outside of court. And so he had already served a longer and harsher sentence than anybody has ever served for that kind of civil contempt of court. But Belmarsh, the Britain's maximum security, highest category prison, they knew he was coming there before he did. That's nice. Doesn't sound like a government stitch up to me. And then a lot of people are conflating. Tommy said this in a video he put out this morning. A lot of people are conflating. Tommy served two prison sentences for the same offence, because the first time he went to prison was this kangaroo court that was over in half an hour, and he was sent straight to first Hull and then moved to Onley. And it was in Onley where he was literally put in an isolation room with a mat on the floor for the first few days, and that's where he had trouble with food. He didn't have enough money, couldn't trust the food that was given to him. The conditions in Belmarsh, on the other hand, he had a room, he had television, you could see he had food, and basically the governor at Belmarsh did everything right, and Tommy has thanked him profusely ever since he got out. But you're confusing two things. The only reason he was treated so well in Belmarsh could possibly be because he made such a stink about Onley, and because there was this demonstration just after he was put inside, organised by Danny, and you know, Ross Kemp tried to make this about that demonstration, and maybe it would turn violent and stuff, but it didn't turn violent. So, you know, in the same program, when you're discussing that something might happen, but then when you show that it didn't, all Ross Kemp, there was just a voiceover that Ross Kemp said, and the protest was broken up by the police. Well, no, it wasn't. It just went home. There was no violence, because had there been violence, Ross Kemp and his cameras would have been there to capture it, and the hero would have shown how bad Tommy's supporters are instead of just normal people. So, you know, you can see the stitch up in what they don't show. And for Ross Kemp to argue that solitary confinement is somehow better because you have a television, the issue with solitary confinement is the taking you away from socialization, from not having people to talk to, from not having contact with other human beings. That is what does you in solitary. That's the torture of solitary confinement. And Ross Kemp sort of dismissed that and downplayed that arsehole for doing that. That's for sure. But all in all, there was a very interesting point that the when this fake news came out. I think it was the, I can't remember. I think it was the, was it the Mirror? I can't remember which newspaper was the first that broke the story with the, that Tommy was beaten up by a 70-year-old in the showers for being, you know, that story. When that story came out, the governor came straight to Tommy's cell with the film cameras and basically said to Tommy, can you defuse this? Can you defuse this for me? Which indicates that they know that Tommy's got a large audience out there. I mean, they absolutely do, and he does. And we did. You know, Avi put out a video quite quickly. We spread that on Telegram. Obviously, Tommy's reach appears to be lower because his Facebook and Twitter were taken away. But the message got out. But it didn't get out, of course, to all the dumb schlubs who read the mainstream media and believe their lies. And, you know, I think there's still an action in progress, actually, over that fake news report. But it was good that it was in the program there with the warden, the governor of the entire prison, coming straight to Tommy's cell and confirming this never happened. This report in a major UK newspaper and then picked up by other major UK newspapers is a total fabrication and a lie. And had the newspaper called the governor of the prison for comment to say, did this happen? He would have told them this did not happen. And then they would have had to go back and review their sources to say, well, how are we printing rubbish like this? But they don't care. They don't care. It sold some newspapers, made Tommy look bad. That's it. That's all they need to do. And it's very important that that is done over and over again, because people might listen to Tommy Robinson. And if they listen to Tommy Robinson, they might actually understand what's been going on in Britain and what he's been talking about for all these years. Anyway, that's enough. Well done, Tommy. I think you came out of that as well as can be expected for someone locked up for crap, for what should never be a crime in the UK. That's for sure. All right. I'm Brian of London. I'm still Brian of London. I'm going to move on to part two, which is Soleimani. Qassam Soleimani. By the way, that name, it's Solomon. You know, it's the Jewish name Solomon, King Solomon. That's the Arabic, well, the Persian form of the Arabic has got also has a version of the word Solomon because he's mentioned in the Quran. I can't remember the exact how they distort Solomon in the Quran. Anyway, this appears. I'm still of the opinion that Trump knew what he was doing. There's rumors on the internet that maybe the Americans didn't know that this guy, this Iranian Soleimani, was in the car. I think that's wrong. I kind of, one of the data points that I'm interested is that the drones that could have done this could have been operating at quite low level. You see, when they're flying over Afghanistan or Pakistan or empty places, they're really high up, 40,000 feet in the, they're way off, and they're using long lenses and so on. Because they don't want to be detected, they don't want to be heard. But when you're in the vicinity of the major Baghdad International Airport, you can fly quite low because nobody cares, you know, it's another aeroplane. So I think that they would have seen the faces of everybody in the car, and they knew exactly who they were bumping off. So that's one thing. I think Trump did this deliberately. And the reason he did it deliberately is very well articulated in a Lee Smith piece in Tablet that I shared, which basically cuts through the crap. For 40 years, America has been at war with Iran. Well, Iran has been at war with America, but they've been doing it via proxies. And to start with, in 1979, Iran was Russia's, the Soviet Union's proxy. So you didn't want America fighting the Soviet Union. So they fought all these wars as proxies. Americans would have a proxy. And in fact, the Iran-Iraq war was an America versus Soviet Union proxy war. But once the Soviet Union fell, for some reason, the American defense and foreign policy establishment continued treating Iran as if it was a Soviet proxy and as if that mattered. And so it didn't fully bring to bear on Iran responsibility for the actions taken by all its proxies. And it has proxies everywhere. It, you know, Hezbollah in Lebanon, it's fighting wars against with the Houthis in Yemen, Iraq, obviously in Iraq, it's all over it. It's all over the Syrian war. Those proxies, nobody, and of course they've been funding the Palestinians, the Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, notwithstanding the Sunni-Shia split, but nobody took Iran fully responsible. Now, Israel has been less reluctant over the last few years to bomb Iranian targets in Syria, but we're still holding back on direct attacks on Iran. But yes, if Iranians carrying missiles or transporting missiles to Lebanon go through Syria and we know about it, then we've bombed them and we've blown up some significant Iranian people. But I don't think Israel would have had the nerve on its own to act to do what America did. And America did it because it's a superpower. There's nothing Iran can do. Iran's paper. It's got no significant tank force. It's got no significant air force. It's got no significant air defences. I mean, worse than having no significant air defences, it's got air defences that blow up Ukrainian 737s. I mean, that's horrific. That, you know, firstly, their air defence equipment could not see or stop anything that America or Israel has. It can't do it. It won't do it. They should just turn the bloody stuff off. We saw this in Syria. The Syrians have never shot down anything useful. All they've done is shoot down their own planes or Russian planes. Turn it off. It ain't going to help you, bros. But instead of that, they're sitting there outside Tehran airport knocking out airliners, which is pretty obviously what's happened. And I'm glad that intelligence services have confirmed it and say they've got radar. Well, I guess it would be infrared satellite imagery that would show the launches of the two interceptors and then the explosion when it hits the jet. Horrible, horrific. I mean, just awful. But that's what happens when you give this kind of equipment. You know, the Russians have got a very bad record on giving this kind of air defense equipment to very, very bad people who are just bad at using it. Terrible. Anyway, so I think America knew exactly what they were doing. I think Trump knew what he was doing. And I think he has dramatically changed a whole mindset. This idea that you can't touch Iran for what its proxy's done. And I think the Iranians absolutely know it now. And yesterday there was a press conference with the Iranian guy. And behind him were all the flags of their proxy. So it's like they now are taking ownership of all these proxies. Good. And I think if you ask me, the Iranians are probably terrified of what some of the proxies will do. Some of them are under strict control. I would think that Hezbollah are probably reined in quite tight, and the ones in Iraq are reined in, notwithstanding the fact that the main guy who would have been the controller is now, you know, buried. The ones that they are probably worrying about is Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. If those guys think that the money's not going to be flowing, they might uptick and do something. And if we're now in a world where anything they do is blamed on Iran, well, God help Iran, basically. Well, Allah help Iran, but he's not too great at the moment. Because, you know, if Trump wants to do damage, he can do damage. I think he's absolutely anti-war. I think he knows he does not want a war with Iran. He doesn't want a ground war. He's not going to invade Iran, but he can do a heck of a lot of significant damage to their leadership. I think what this showed is he's not unwilling to blow up their leadership, and that scares the crap out of them. And it's a far better way for them to be than not afraid. He has established deterrence. And for this, once again, I can't fault Trump. I like Trump. And I loved that whole press conference or that speech he gave with Pence and the generals and the defense secretary all coming in from the side and lining up and standing on their marks perfectly. And then, you know, 1 minute they all stand there rock solid, and then both doors are opened from inside. You know, so Trump had two people pulling the doors aside, and the the bright light that Trump walks out of. I mean, it was worldwide wrestling. It was The Apprentice. It was television. The guy is a televisual genius. He stage managed that show perfectly. And then all the generals sort of just part, stand aside and watch him go past and then close ranks behind him. I mean, it was just, it's a show. And there is a show element to it, but that's also important because the Iranians are watching this show and they see power, they see strength, they see unity, and they respect that. And the only way, you never get peace with Islam. We'll never have peace with Islam. We will only ever have détente. We will only ever have temporary suspensions of violence. Jihad ain't going to stop. It's baked in. There's until the world moves past Islam, there's going to be jihad in the world. And the only way to live alongside Islam is to make it so that their jihad doesn't work. So they know that jihad doesn't work. So they know that they will get beaten harshly if they come out of their box. And that's what Trump has done. He's put them back in a box. He has shown them what strength is, and he's shown them the overwhelming power. And as he walked up to the podium, before he even said hello, Iran will not have nuclear weapons while I am president. That's what this is all about, because you can only do what he did to Iran if they don't have a nuclear weapon. If they've got a nuclear weapon, the game changes. America has overwhelming technical, military, and economic superiority over Iran until the moment that it can deploy a nuclear weapon. And that's why we're in a different position with North Korea. And that's why North Korea is much more, you know, delicate. I'm still firmly in the Trump camp. The world would have been an absolute horrific disaster if Clinton had got in. Whoever the Democrats pick, there's no one even remotely close to being able to run anything, let alone the world. And so, count me as a Trump fan. I'm Brian of London. I am still here in Israel. We have had a lot of rain. And thanks very, very much for watching. This will be out on 3Speak later. I may well divide up this into two different videos. So look for those later. And thanks very much for watching. As always, you can find my website, brianoflondon.me. Tip me if you like. And Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Stay dry, stay safe, stay warm, and onwards to a brighter future.